Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
53106 is our text number that will cost you 30 cent, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. A couple of comments on abortion pills that Susan Daly was talking to us about. Anthony says, people also import legal recreational drugs and fake pharmaceutical drugs. Just because people can clearly import illegal drugs here, does that mean we should legalise any drug because it's happening anyway? No one's Anthony making that argument one way or the other. It was just to try and give facts in as far as we know them. About the use of abortion pills in Ireland. That is all. You can infer whatever you want from that, and people will probably infer different things from it. We got the abortion pills 2 years ago. We had a crisis pregnancy and no way we could manage it. We got the pills delivered to an address in Northern Ireland, so probably not on the statistics. It's Our Secret was very distressing. Without any support, all went fairly smoothly, but we have absolutely no regrets. Says the texter, one incidence of that. And Brendan points out, going back to the piece we did on MH370, the Indian Ocean is on average 4 kilometres deep. What are the chances of them finding a plane that far down? Slim, I'd say. Says Brendan, you may well be right, Brendan. Now, there was some company that is conducting a search, but so far it's been pretty fruitless for them. So, if you're not even in the right place, there's not much chance of finding it. But I think, you know, the general attitude was from Larry Vance, at least, that it won't be found unless at some point in the future they come up with some different sort of technology that will be able to peer down that 4 kilometres. Anyway, it is time for our farming slot. Mairead Lavery of the Farmers Journal joins us once again. More good news from China.
Yes, but just on that flight thing... You know, that is like your proverbial needle in a haystack. And what I can't understand about it is that pilot must have practiced what he was planning to do and how they've never been able to find it on any flight simulator or anything like that.
I suppose experience, but
yeah, but still to do it exactly the right way. But anyway, we're back to China.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it was 4 years ago since that happened as well.
Yeah.
My God, if you'd have asked me, I'd have said 2 years ago at maximum. So, yes, China, yes, the holy grail as far as farming is concerned and agricultural exports from Ireland. It's our second largest export market for dairy and pork. Now, you wouldn't think that, but, you know, not the EU, not the UK, it's our second biggest market. And it's been growing over the last few years very successfully. So getting beef in there has been a big achievement. And, you know, we've had the love affair going on for the last, and the courting going on for the last couple of years. And it was all eventually signed, sealed and delivered there a few weeks ago. So Minister Creed is out on a big trade mission out in China at the moment. And today we got news that the first 50 million euros worth of beef contract has been signed with ABP. And it's good news. It's good news because... It gives us an alternative market to the UK market, where an awful lot of our beef goes, 51%, especially in the light of the progress that Brexit doesn't seem to be making and the implications for tariffs on agricultural produce into the UK if we don't have some sort of a deal or a good deal organised by the time all of that comes around. So in China, you're talking about... In terms of beef consumption, they're eating about 4 to 6 kgs per annum each. And in Ireland, we're talking about 19 kgs per annum is how much beef we eat. So it's a fair old chunk of beef, you know.
And would these be live exports?
This is frozen meat.
This is frozen meat,
God,
yeah.
No, you'd never...
No, it's too far. No.
You'd never get them over that length.
Yeah.
You mean you could probably get it in chilled, but it would be very expensive. So this is actually frozen beef. But if each Chinese person was to go up from the 4 to 6, if they were even up to just go to 5 to 7 kilos of beef instead of 4 to 6, 5 to 7, it would be the equivalent of 1.4 million tons. Now, bear in mind that we've only put in the first 50 tons. So, you know, the absolute extent of the market out there is just unbelievable.
It's mind-boggling. Yeah.
So we're the first major European beef exporter to secure access to the market. And, you know, fair dues to the minister, his department and officials, the farmers as well, and the processors, who have had to kind of really I won't say, you know, how China says how, you know, jump and Irish say how far or how high. But, I mean, they have put everything in place to be able to secure this market. And having made a success of it with the other produce that's going in and having lived up to the expectations, it's a great mark of confidence in what we're producing. Mm. So,
Is it known, like, in like, do the Chinese, like, have steak and chips or is it used in... What's it?
Well, it's actually the cuts are more they're not the finer cuts, you know, they're not the steaks that we're going over. Yeah. It's brisket and stuff like that. That's more slow cooking. So I imagine it's more for the equivalent of whatever the Chinese would have for stews.
Yeah.
So it's meat that takes longer to cook, and you know to tenderize it. So it's not the fillet steaks or sirloin steaks or anything like that. That's not what's going over.
Yeah.
So anyway, look, they're out there at the minute and they're doing the deals and, you know, hopefully, you know, it will give us that market edge and it will give us the alternative. And the thing now is to grow it.
How big of a gap, though? Presuming worst case scenario in Brexit and no one would want to export to Britain if suddenly there's tariffs or you know.
Well, you wouldn't be able to get it in.
So how big of a hole would we have to plug then?
Well, I mean,
the loss of that market.
Absolutely huge now. Yeah. And
that's still that way. China's is number two. Is Britain still the number one?
Britain is still our number one market. Yeah. It's 51%. China now, you know, we can end up becoming, well, it's our second largest market for dairy and pork, but it's not now for beef yet.
Mm.
It'll have to go a good bit further. But look, it's all been very high profile. They're not kind of, you know, being very quiet about this. So the Chinese market, obviously the expectations are very good in it. Or they wouldn't be, you know, they'd be going in and doing the 50 million and saying very little else about it. But and we also got news last week that another bunch of processors have been given a license to supply to the market as well. So this is only the first of, you know, I think is it 9 plants now that are have a license to supply to China.
Okay.
So, yeah, but the Brexit thing, you know, it doesn't seem to be getting any easier. And there are major tariffs on the imports of food. But, you know, I mean, Britain has to import food. So will they go for a real cheap food policy of, you know, like I was just amazed the other night. One of the guys on the MasterChef in the UK, he's the greengrocer guy. He was out in the huge scale, chicken production areas and, you know, where the scale was massive.
Yeah.
Now, on the BBC, you never see massive scale in farming. It's always artisan and it's always, you know, cutesy and stuff like that. And, you know, not even at commercial level. It's even at a different level on the programme. And I just said to myself, I wonder, are they softening up the British public now for, you know, really mass farming, mass food production, as opposed to kind of conventional production, which is what the little red tractor and all of that is all about over there.
Because that's what they need.
Because that's what they're going to need and that's where they're going to have to source their produce from.
Though if Britain will continue to need cheap food.
Yeah, they need food, yeah.
But then again, there's probably other parts of the world that could get even cheaper food than from the European Union and us.
I mean, Europe is a country where food prices, we've tried to, you know, keep you know, family farms in operation.
Mm.
That's good for the countryside. It keeps the countryside populated. It keeps an awful lot of things happening. But, you know, the trend has been away from huge factory-style farming.
Mm-hmm.
But there are countries that can deliver that and a lot of other stuff besides that certainly has been banned all across Europe.
Elle has a question on this. Why does Ireland export so much beef but also import beef from other countries? Why don't we just eat what we produce?
Well, we produce way more than what we can eat.
Mm.
We produce for every 10 kilos of beef that we produce, 8 of it is for export. So we would either have to cut our production levels by, what would that be, 80%?
Yeah.
But
do we import much?
I wouldn't have thought we imported an awful lot. Now, we might import some Wagyu beef.
Mm.
That's that, you know, Japanese beef that's really kind of weird. Well, it's not weird. That's not fair.
Yeah, but I know what you mean.
It's a very exotic. My son convinced me to eat it one night. It was, I don't like fat on meat now at all. A bit of marbling is all right, but the marbling through this was spectacular.
Yeah.
So I don't know about too much else in the line of beef being imported to tell you the truth. Because, I mean, we are one of the chief exporting nations, but it's the same with dairy. You know, I think it's 9 out of every 10 litres of milk that we export. So, I mean, agricultural production is really big in this country. And so out the door, we have to sell it.
Now, sheep farmers are not happy because of tagging.
No, they're not.
I mean, would have thought the sheep are tagged already.
They are.
Yeah.
Yes, I know. I've been doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're tagged as soon as they're born, little lambs. And it's you have to do it. And so farmers have the sheep tagged. You can walk into a farm. You can look at their the tags and all the sheep, and you can go to their herd book and you'll see the tags written up and when they were born and all about them and everything. You know, more information now we have on the sheep than we have on the children. And that is true, you know. I wouldn't keep their, like, you know, kids ask me, my daughter in particular, "Ma'am, did we get all our vaccines?" Couldn't tell you, but if you ask me, did the sheep get them outside? Yes, I can tell
them. And tagging them might be useful. Children, I
mean. Yeah, exactly. Especially if it's electronic.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, we've been doing the tags for a long time now. And we actually were doing them at home even before it became, you know, that you had to do it. Because it was a very good way of monitoring the flock and knowing exactly what was going on with it. But anyway, now they want to bring in electronic tagging. Now, the farmers are up in arms because the money that you make out of sheep is absolutely next to nothing. You know, on a lamb, say, that you, it costs €86 to produce a lamb over the course of its lifetime. And you're talking about maybe getting €100 for it. So maybe €14 profit. And they're talking about this thing. They're talking about this tag costing €1. Now, €1 tag sounds nothing in the face of it. But it's actually a 7% cut on lamb prices to the farmer. And they're the lowland flocks where you actually have, you know, lambs reaching that kind of money, €100. But if you're talking about the little lambs down in the mountains across kind of Connemara and Donegal and Mayo and Kerry, sure, they're only making 30, €40, hardly even that when they go out for sale. So imposing this €1 electronic tag is really got up farmers' goat. Now, or sheep,
no pun intended, yes.
Yeah. And what they're saying is, okay, we know exactly, we can, it's, this is all about traceability. At farm level, we have full traceability right up to the minute we bring the lambs in the trailer into the processor. Then we lose it. And we lose it anyway, whether it's electronic or not.
Yeah.
Because,
and what's the argument then for the electronic tag?
Well, seemingly, cynically, sheep farmers would say, this is all about all the stakeholders. And the stakeholders want this because it would mean that if they had electronic things, electronic tags, they'd only have to scan them. It would all go up into the computer, fine and handy. And you wouldn't have to have a fella at the gate reading all these tags and writing them up in, with a pencil in a notebook. And there is something to that.
Yeah.
But if the saving is going to be on their side, I mean,
then why aren't they paying for it? Yeah.
And anyway, this is the row at the moment, and it's going on right across the country. Farmers are united against it. Minister says it's compulsory. It's happening. It's supposed to be happening later in the year. But anyway, that's the story with it.
Right. Okay. Now, and the weather is...
thanks be to God.
Yeah. And a lovely day to talk about the weather.
Lovely day to talk about the weather. And, you know, you're talking about the weather and the difference it makes. And just think, if it makes this difference to cows, you know, what does it make to humans? Like, because we're all, you know, from the same source originally. And, you know, what's in the back of our reptilian minds, you know, like the weather has to have a huge impact on us. So February, March, grass wasn't growing. 30 to 40 kgs, that's kilos per hectare per day, which is very, very low. The cows were all locked up inside, looking out, wanting to get out. I mean, really mad to get out. But supply was down 10 to 20%. Massive amount, you know. Butter fat, which is what we make the Kerrygolds and all the nice butters with, was down another 10%. And protein was also down. That goes into the milk powders and to the cheeses. And that's what farmers are paid on, because the balance of the milk is only water. The real ingredients in milk are the fats, the butter fats and the proteins. And that's what farmers get paid for. And that was dropping. The sheer volume was dropping. There was no grass growing. Miserable. 4 weeks later, grass growth has absolutely doubled. It is racing. This idea, you know, you could see grass growing. Well, you can actually see grass growing at the moment in some parts of the country. Milk supply has recovered to its standard levels. Same with butter fat and the same with protein. And, you know, now that the whole thing is to keep the nice leafy grass in front of the cows. And, you know, it's all coming together because usually when cows are out, they're on this rotation around so many fields and it takes so many days to get to them.
Yeah.
But then these rotations have all been missed. So all this grass coming on together. So the thing now is farmers have to get out and start making silage as well, or closing ground off for silage. And, you know, we got a rude lesson last winter. So now the whole thing is you need to plan for a 6 month winter at least. And, you know, our guys are saying to us, farmers need to be advised to have one pit of silage or a good number of round bales spare at the end of every year.
Yeah.
You have to count that into your calculations now, because we've just had too many frights with bad weather, you know, and the cost implications have just been too heavy.
Mm. So, but given the late start, though, will it be possible to do that? Yeah,
well, that's the thing, and that's going to be the management thing. And so, you know, people who are part of Chagas groups or farm advisory groups or discussion groups, you know, they really need to be working out what they have to do ahead of time and plan for it. So, but the thing now is to keep the nice grass in front of the cows and to keep the butter and protein levels up and recover the income that's been lost over the first. This is peak milk now. That's what it's called, peak milk. It's the time when the cows are most productive in giving their milk. You know, once you kind of come to July and August, that you know, clears off.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so anyway, that's great.
That's great.
Look, and thanks to everybody who contacted me about the cuckoo.
Yeah, and loads of people are hearing them. Though, funnily enough, a lot of people said that they heard the cuckoo, but not as many as they used to hear.
Yeah,
it seems to be a kind of a reduction of
I spent last weekend outside. I hardly went in at all, and I never heard the cuckoo once. Absolutely distraught over it. Now, there's three things in that I love, absolutely love. I love snowdrops coming up in January and February. Absolutely love them. The whole sign of new life. I love the swallows and the swifts when they arrive. The noise and the chatter. We had five of them outside the window, our bedroom window, and now we've got they all collapsed over the winter, all the nests. So they've got two of them back and they're inhabited and their clatter and the going with them is fantastic to hear. And the third thing was the cuckoo. And I had no cuckoo this year. I had very minimum cuckoo last year. So I'm just worried
about
the cuckoo.
Maybe you need to import a cuckoo.
No, well, I'm just worried about them now. Yeah. You know, I don't know. There's nothing has changed in our area really in 20 years.
Mm.
And I don't know why there should be no cuckoo this year.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the farming is the same as it ever was. You know, everything is kind of
the environment hasn't changed.
The environment hasn't changed. Now it's wetter. And maybe that is a problem. It's a lot wetter. I don't know whether that's an issue, but, you know, there's the same amount of forestry in the area, the same amount of grazing ground, you know, there's the same amount of ditches. It's there's nothing has been come in. There's no big reclamation job or, you know, big kind of clean up job, big reseeding job. Nothing like that has happened. And I don't know whether that would influence the cuckoo, but certainly we've no cuckoo and we're now into the middle of May.
Mairead, thanks a million for coming in to us. Mairead Lavery there from the Farmers Journal, back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.